Today on Lasting Hope with Pastor Greg Spires.
We want a God who is practical, a God who is predictable, a God who is measurable. He shows up here, I know exactly what he's doing, and so I can script my life. I just want a God who merely expects me to live a somewhat moral life, but makes no demands whatsoever outside of that. Turns out God is none of those things, and so the most convenient way to fix that problem is to create our own God. And that's precisely what the people of Israel did.
Welcome to Lasting Hope with Bible teacher Greg Spires, pastor of FBC in Medford, Oregon. Many of us remember the ad campaign of the well-known fast food chain that assured their customers special orders didn't upset them and you could have your meal prepared your way. Well, as a slogan, that may have served the restaurant well, but when it comes to us serving an almighty God, Pastor Greg explains in our study of Exodus today how such an attitude not only misses the point, but causes the people of Israel to miss God altogether. Let's join Pastor Greg now.
This is what Exodus 32:7-14 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Go down, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I may make a great nation out of you." But Moses implored the Lord his God and said, "O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with a great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, 'With evil intent did he bring them out, to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth?' Turn from your burning anger and relent from this disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever.' And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people." Exodus 32, missing God. Missing God. I just got to be up front with you. We're going to talk about idolatry today. And when we hear idolatry, say, "Oh, we're going to talk about idolatry." Oh, that's great, because I don't struggle with worshiping idols. Buckle on. Turns out you do. Now, let me show you how. Monday Night Football. Now, that may not be your idol. Monday Night Football, just an example of this. They have this new thing. ESPN added this new thing, a sideline reporter. You say, well, sideline reporter isn't new. This is new. This reporter is in a booth that's on a crane. So he's like in this cart thing that's up in the air, and this thing moves back and forth so he can be right involved, and every now and then they'll switch over to this analyst, and he'll give his point of view on what's going on in the game because he can sort of hear the players on the sidelines. It's kind of right there. It's great. Great access. And what they've discovered, ESPN, is actually fans watching this guy on TV, they love it. They love the point of view. They love his insight and the analysis he gives to the game. They love the perspective of having a guy on the field. People who don't like this guy is people who paid for second row tickets at the field, because this crane is always at the line of scrimmage. If you don't know what the line of scrimmage is, you just have to Google it on your phone. I can't explain football. It's just not time for it. It's so that you paid $400 to sit at the 50-yard line, second row in an NFL, and then this guy parks his crane in front of you. And so what ESPN did, because they got a bunch of complaints, you know what they did? They mounted a TV on the back of that crane. So when he's in front of you, you're seeing what everybody is seeing at home who just is paying for cable. Right? What does this have to do with anything? You've got the real thing that's out there, Monday Night Football, and you paid money to see it. And then in front of this is this thing that's blocking you, and it's a cheap imitation. Now, in that moment, you're saying, well, of course, I wouldn't want to watch the football game on the TV if I was there. Well, here's the thing. That's exactly what happens to us. We will put up with cheap imitations. We're going to see this in the lives of the people of Israel, and I don't want to pull any punches. I want you to be able to see it by the end of the time. This is a normal thing for us to do. It's a normal default position of the human heart is to be willing to put up with a cheap imitation of what God offers, and we end up missing God himself. And the sooner that we're able to grapple with that and wrestle with that, the better we can set aside the cheap imitations and instead seek the Lord himself. Missing God. First thing we do, verses 1 through 6, Exodus 32, missing God because we are blind to his presence. We are blind to his presence. It turns out when God's not around, we act like ourselves, and when he shows up, we act the way we think he ought to. How do we know this? There's a TV show on, and it's called What Would You Do? Have you seen this show? So the guy sets up a scenario in like a restaurant, and what he'll do is he'll have say an adult and a kid, and the kid will do something wrong, and the adult will start screaming at the kid, like in a real abusive way. And the question for the show is, will the other patrons of the restaurant say anything? Right? And then when somebody like sticks up for the victim in that, then all the cameras come out and say, oh, look, you stuck up for him. Then you have other people, they go and they start harping on the kid too. Yeah, you should listen to your parents. Yeah, so the question is, what would you do? It turns out we act different when we're on live TV. And once the cameras come out, we're like, oh, okay, we act different. And this is what's happening to the people of Israel. They have missed that God is present with them, and their actions reveal they think God is on vacation. Look at verse 1 of Exodus 32. The people saw that Moses was delayed in coming down the mountain. People of Israel were at the foot of the mountain. Moses was up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, having a conversation with God and receiving from God the covenant, the promise of God. Took a long time, took 40 days. It was a long time in coming, and so the people go to Aaron, the priest, Moses' brother, and say, listen, we don't know what's going on with Moses. He went up on Volcano Mountain, and we think he's probably dead. What we need is a God we can worship. So they go to Aaron, and he says, make for us gods who will go before us. So Aaron tells him, take off your earrings, throw them onto a tarp, and he turns their gold earrings and jewelry into an idol that looks like a calf. Probably what it was a wooden cow that they then covered with gold to look like a calf. So he took their earrings off and he took their arm bracelets off and they made a calf that they could worship. And this is what he says down in verse 4. These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar. And he said, tomorrow we will have a feast. That's a worship festival. And they rose up the next day and they had their festival. And the people sat down and they ate and they drank. And then they had a bit of a party. Moses is gone for 40 days. God, as far as their minds are concerned, is absent. He's history. We don't know what's going on. God isn't here. We need a God, so we will make a God of our own making. And so they cast an idol. And what we have to understand about this idol, they weren't necessarily abandoning the idea of God. What they needed was something to show them God was physically there. So on the one hand, they were doing what they shouldn't have been doing, creating an idol. On the other hand, what they're probably doing is saying, well, we're just going to create something that looks like God. As far as we can tell, I don't know how they came up with cow. Probably it was because of their time in Egypt. And so we're going to create up. Now, we're still worshiping God in some sense, but we're going to ascribe our worship to this idol, knowing that it represents God or gods. We need a God we can see. We need a God we can talk to. We need a God that is tangible. We need a God that we can look. There he is. There he is up on that shelf, that golden calf. We know he's here. How do we know God is here? Nobody stole the cow. We miss God because we're blind to his presence. Now, God hadn't gone anywhere. He was right up on the mountain with Moses, but that wasn't tangible for them. They couldn't see him. They couldn't talk to him. All they could see was the smoke and the lightning. As far as they were concerned, Moses was now dead. They needed someone they could connect with. This God, I could walk up to him and pet him on the head if I wanted. He's right there. I know where he is. He is tangible. He is meaningful. There's no mystery to it. I pray to it. I know he heard me. He's right there. Of course he heard me. There's no question about it whatsoever. And this is what we do because we want to have a tangible, meaningful encounter with God himself. And why don't we have a tangible, meaningful encounter with God? What's the problem? We abandoned him. We said, we want to do it our way. We sinned against him. We said, God, you've got some great ideas. I think mine are better. My ideas are better because it means my life gets to be lived my way. And the result of sin is it separates us from God. And we say, we are separated from God. And then we go, where's God? So he didn't go anywhere. We walked away. And now we yearn in our hearts for a meaningful, tangible God that we can worship in person. And it frustrates that God isn't that. But the reason for that is because we walked away from him. We want God who is predictable, God who is real, God who is in fact practical. God that when we pray to him, he does what we need done. Wouldn't you like that if every time you prayed for something, it just got done? God, I need a few bucks. And it just shows up. God, I need my car to work. And it just starts. I need a job, and jobs just flow in. I get to pick from my jobs. I need my family to act in such a way that everything they do is precisely the way in which I would do it, without me having to tell them how I want to do it. I mean, that's precisely what we want, right? The whole world geared around how it ought to be, right? By definition, that makes you God of the universe. And we want God to finally figure out we are God of the universe. And that's what the people of Israel wanted. God has not got it into his head yet. We want things a particular way. We want our food on schedule. We want our promised land close. And we always want to have water. He said, well, these are reasonable demands. And what God was saying throughout their journey through the wilderness, I will provide them, though, on my schedule. We want a God who is practical, a God who is predictable, a God who is measurable. He shows up here. He goes on vacation here so I can do what I want. I know exactly what he's doing, and so I can script my life. And I want a God who is reasonable. I just want a God who merely expects me to live a somewhat moral life, but makes no demands whatsoever outside of that. Turns out God is none of those things, and so the most convenient way to fix that problem is to create our own God. And that's precisely what the people of Israel did. They want a God that they could see and touch and feel, and it works every time. Psalm 106, 19 through 20. Psalm 106 was written by Moses, and it just so happens a few verses here in Psalms 106, we're going to refer to it a couple of times, he wrote about this time where they made this calf. Psalms 106, 19 through 20, here's what it says. They made a calf in Horeb, that's the location they were, and they worshipped a metal image. They exchanged the glory of God for the image of an ox that eats grass. It's supposed to make fun of them. Because that's what they exchanged the glory of God for the image of an ox that eats grass. Here's the point. One of the points he's making several is this. We want to be able to worship God. It is a part of being human to want to worship. We want to worship. But what we want is for worship, our life of knowing God, to be personally satisfying, personally gratifying, personally meaningful, personally noteworthy. I should be able to write in my journal every single day that my life with God is a new high of personal significance and satisfaction. Because I want everything about my relationship with God to be designed to meet my personal desires for meaning and satisfaction. And so a calf does this. They worshiped a metal image because they could design worship to make sure that it met their needs and their satisfaction. They exchanged the glory of God for an ox because the glory of God is unpredictable. Whereas an ox that's made out of gold will sit there on the shelf. Look back at Exodus 32:6. They rose up early the next morning. They offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. The people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. So this was a typical festival. In fact, to some degree, they're following the outline of the law. What they're doing is taking what they knew God would want, burnt offerings and sacrifice offerings and fellowship offerings, and they're now offering it to this cow. So they're taking their worship of God and altering it so that the focus of their worship is not on the object of their worship, God. The focus of their worship is on themselves. Let's make sure our worship satisfies me. It's a meal that I want to eat. It's people I want to spend time with. And then they rose up and had a party. The DJ came out, music, dancing, games, and yes, some bad stuff. Yes, it got a little rowdy. So everything about this was designed for them to come in and receive from God what they wanted, that which is going to satisfy their needs and their wants. The God of the universe is instead asking us to worship him and have the focus of our worship not be our own hearts, but instead actually to be him. The question in our relationship with God is this, not whether our relationship with God is personally significant. The question in our relationship with God is this, is it significant to him? Is he the focus of our relationship? Whereas my question about my relationship with God is this, what has he done for me today? How has he showed up for me today? Is God personally satisfying? We miss God because we're blind to the fact that he is present. And if God were to show up present and we saw an experience, we would not be thinking about ourselves. We would be encountering the most glorious and beautiful thing we've ever seen. We miss God because we're blind to his presence, and so we create stuff which we can see. We want a redeemer we can see, even if that redeemer is an ox. We want a redeemer we can see, even if that redeemer is less glorious than the God of the universe. A couple of things we put in that spot: money, stuff, family, work, because that stuff fixes stuff. It gets it done. Having enough money gets it done. Having enough stuff gets it done. God is very nice, but he doesn't show up and pay bills. I can't write God on the bottom of a medical bill. I mean, you can. It's still going to be due. I'm just telling you, you can try it, but it's not. They're still going to want the money. And so God is terribly frustrating because money, on the one hand, it gets it done. Isn't it funny? When you pay a medical bill, they actually consider it paid. Have you noticed that? So, yes, when you pay your bills, they're paid. But if you write God on it, they send it back to you and say, that's how nice for you. So now send us the money. And we say, well, that's not how I treat God. No, this is very hard for us because God is great, but what is it? But does he get it done? And it's the same struggle the people of Israel were having 40 days and 40 nights. Where is God? He's not getting it handled. We don't know what's up. Build a cow, he gets it done. It's handled. The problem is what that reveals is a blindness to God's presence. We think just because the stuff we want handled isn't handled, we think God must be gone. It could just be that we've got our eyes on the wrong set of priorities. Missing God, we're blind to his presence. Okay, look at Exodus 32, 7 through 14. There's two symptoms of blindness, and then we'll look at this other section. Two symptoms of it. Number one, either we think his holiness is achievable, that means we can be good enough to have a relationship with God, or his holiness is harmless, meaning I can't be as good as God, but he's not dangerous. So missing God, being blind to God, means usually either I think I can be good enough to know him, or he's better than me, but not that much better, and so he's harmless. The result is this, we're unimpressed with his holiness. Missing God, we're unimpressed with his holiness. Exodus 32, verse 7, we read it. Lord says to Moses, go down, for your people whom you brought out of Egypt have corrupted themselves. You've all had that phone call. You're at work, at the grocery store, whatever it is, get your phone call from your spouse. Guess what your son did? Okay, you notice that? It's your son when they're acting like you. That's the connection there. You know, it's my son when everything's going swimmingly. This, and this is what God is doing to Moses. He's saying, listen, your people are, they're blowing it. Nice job, Moses. They have turned quickly. I have brought them out of Egypt. This is just a few months, maybe 2 or 3 months after coming out of Egypt, after the 10 plagues, after walking through the Red Sea, after getting the manna, after getting water out of a rock. Just a few months later, they've already built an idol and they're worshiping it. And God says this, let me alone that I may consume them. I am going to destroy them. I am going to make a great nation instead out of you, Moses. God's holiness is dangerous. And we're missing God when we're unimpressed with his holiness. The problem with understanding God's holiness is this. For us to understand God's holiness is very difficult because we don't have a frame of reference for it. So this is a silly illustration, but this is how I think of it. Understanding God's holiness is like describing the color blue to someone who has been blind since birth. So someone's been blind their entire life, and then you want to describe to them the color blue. How are you going to do that? Are you going to say, well, blue is kind of, it looks like what cold would look like. That seems like a good way. It looks like what the sky is. Okay, the sky doesn't work. Looks like cold would look like. Then we realize we only associate the blue with cold because we've associated with it over time because we see it. And it may not be an actual association. So how do you describe blue to the unseen? How do you describe holiness of God to the unholy, to those who have abandoned holiness? And so what we tend to do is minimize his holiness. But here in this story, we are confronted with God's holiness. If they will abandon me, they have walked away from life. They have walked away from God, who is the source of life. And God's holiness is not compromising. God's holiness is not pragmatic, saying, I'll just figure it out and we'll make it work. We'll come up with a deal. God is saying, no, my holiness requires holiness. We're missing God when we are unimpressed with his holiness. The idol of a cow seems somewhat reasonable. To worship the cow, you do have to show up for cow worship time. You do have to make a sacrifice. You do have to make an offering. You do have to show up and do the thing. That seems reasonable. We can show up for cow worship time. It doesn't seem out of line. I mean, we're out in the desert anyway. What else do we have going on, right? So the cow seems somewhat reasonable. God, on the other hand, he seems a little high-strung and overbearing. I mean, you break one little rule and you're cast out of the camp. You have to walk around yelling unclean. You mess one little thing up and he's going to smote you. The cow seems very reasonable. So what we're going to do is minimize God's holiness and worship a cow who just has a little bit more reasonable demands. Let you in on something here. Look at the end of this passage. God says this in verse 14. The Lord relented from the disaster he had spoken of bringing on his people. Verse 14, the Lord relented. So one thing we can say, he is unreasonable because he never should have relented. God is being unreasonable because he should have brought judgment. What was the reason God didn't bring judgment? Simply because Moses intervened on behalf of the people and reminded God of his covenants. He said, God, you have made a promise you'll take them to the promised land. And God, you're a forgiving God. And God relented his judgment on them because Moses appealed to God based on God's nature.
Pastor Greg Spires has been pointing out the very righteous God we serve is also the one who dispenses his grace upon his people, even when they seem to have turned away. And we'll be hearing much more of this message titled Missing God on the next Lasting Hope. And we'd like to invite you to listen each week at this same time for more encouragement from God's Word. And by the way, this and many of Pastor Greg's messages are also available for listening online at lastinghope.org. You know, these past few months have caused many of us to be anxious about life and the future. The daily news is filled with chaos and unrest, along with an uncertainty about our health and safety. That's why Pastor Greg has written encouragement in his Lasting Hope newsletter. Every week, he shares stories of hope and offers biblical wisdom that will inspire and reassure you in these challenging days. you can sign up to receive Greg's Lasting Hope newsletter when you go to lastinghope.org. That's lastinghope.org. Greg Spires is the lead pastor of FBC in Medford, Oregon. And if you don't have a church home of your own, Pastor Greg would like to invite you to attend our in-person church services at FBC. You can join us for worship and a message from Pastor Greg at 9:30 and 11 a.m. on Sunday, and we'd love to meet you in person. We also continue to stream our services online at lastinghope.org. Again, just go to lastinghope.org at 9:30 or 11 a.m. on Sunday and click on the link at the top of the website that says Watch Service Live. Our website also has more information about Lasting Hope and the various ministries of FBC. Once again, just go to lastinghope.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but please join us next time as we continue this message titled, Missing God. That's next time on Lasting Hope with Pastor Greg Spires. Lasting Hope is the radio ministry of FBC in Medford, Oregon.